It's a very good morning to the Shadow Defence Minister and Federal Member for Corio, who joins me on the line live from Canberra. Richard Miles, how are you?
Good, Mitchell. How are you?
Very well indeed on this budget morning. It's a very exciting day.
Oh, it's a big day. It's,
absolutely.
In a non-election year, this would be the biggest day of the political year for us here in Canberra. But obviously, given what's coming up in a month or so, it kind of pales a little bit, but Budget Day is still a very big day up here.
Just on that point, in terms of an election coming up in the next month, is there any chance at all that the government may say, surprise, we're going to have a half-Senate election and then the full election in November, or are they pretty much committed to doing both houses in May sometime?
Well, I think they will go in May, but one thing this government has proved is that to expect the unexpected, and there isn't any level of stupidity which isn't beyond them. So at one level, I think anything's possible, but it would be profoundly stupid to move down that path. We've had synchronised House and Senate elections now for about 50 years, and so to unsettle that would be a huge mistake. But frankly, I think this government, where it's at this moment, and its attempts to cling to power, are capable of anything.
What's the mood like up there in Canberra, particularly on the opposition side? Is it cautious optimism? Is it just optimism? What is it?
I think it's cautious optimism is a fair way of putting it, but I mean, we're optimistic, but we're also very mindful that there's an election out there to be won, and it can be won and it can be lost, and we take nothing for granted. And so we are out there each and every day trying to explain to the people of Australia, and in my case the people of Geelong, why we should be an alternative government. And you know, we've been very focused on policy. We're probably the most policy rich opposition that there has been, literally. If you look at what we're doing in relation to tax reform, that's the most comprehensive platform in respect of tax reform that any opposition has put forward since Federation. So we've been working very hard. We know what we would do if we were given the opportunity to govern, and we're going to spend every day between now and the next election, whenever that is, explaining to people why we should be given that chance.
The Treasurer this morning was quoted as saying that tonight's budget surplus hasn't happened by accident. It's attributed to the government's economic management. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's really a function of the global economic situation. It's certainly not about the government's own management. I mean, we're in a moment in time now where we are seeing all the major economies in the world going through a period of growth, and that's contributing to a very strong global economy, which is why revenues are up in Australia as they are around the world, and why the government's in the position that it's in tonight. But I mean, can anyone point to a difficult decision that this government has made? Really, their proposition to the Australian people is that you can just sort of magic this stuff, and yet they've engaged in no structural reform. People understand that the budget is actually in structural deficit, and that there will be some good years where you're in surplus, but over the journey we're not going to be in that unless we make the difficult decisions that need to be made, so that we don't hand over to our kids and our grandkids a significant public debt, which would change the very nature of this country. And that's why we've been engaged in that kind of debate, and why we're putting forward a range of decisions which are difficult propositions, but actually do something about dealing with the fact that the budget has been placed into structural deficit. And the issue here, Mitchell, is that, you know, we shouldn't forget this is a government which has doubled the debt. I mean, that they like to go out there and say that their brand is good economic management, but nothing could be further from the truth. You know, they were driving around before 2013 with their debt truck. The reality is that debt truck is turned into a debt super tanker, and that's what we've now got in terms of our budget situation. So the fact that in a particularly good economic year globally, which Australia, along with every other country in the world, has benefited, they laud that as being an achievement of theirs, is just a joke.
When you talk about structural reform, are you talking about raising taxes, or, as Amanda Rishworth said last night on Q&A, at least reducing some of the tax concessions like negative gearing?
Yeah, I mean, exactly as Amanda put it. And if you look at what we are doing with negative gearing, with what the reforms we put in place in respect of superannuation, making sure that multinationals pay their fair share, dealing with family trusts, All of those are big decisions, they're difficult decisions, but they're the kind of decisions that inevitably you're going to need to make if you're going to put the budget in a situation where it's not in structural deficit, and that's the propositions that we've been working on. So, you know, we are actually making the difficult decisions required to engage in good economic management. That's not what this mob have been doing. They have doubled the debt. The Liberal government, for all their chest beating, have doubled the debt. They're in fact appalling economic managers, and by their own standards, they should hang their heads in shame.
We had one of the state crossbench MPs on the program yesterday, Andy Medic from the Animal Justice Party, and he said in this budget, Corangamite is going to get 50 Olympic swimming pools and a spaceport, and the northern suburbs of Geelong in the electorate of Corio are going to miss out. Do you think Corio is missing out?
Well, I certainly think that this is a government which is deeply focused on its own re-election and nothing else. It's certainly not focused on the people of Australia and the people of Geelong and the people of Northern Geelong. So, you know, we're looking at a whole lot of promises being made to try and to try and deal with Sarah Henderson's fate and to try and save her. All in, you know, the 11th hour before an election, how anyone can treat that with any sense of credibility. And frankly, you know, as I talk to people around Geelong, I don't think anyone sees this as credible at all. People understand what's going on here. This is just throwing money to try and sandbag a seat. At the same time, the Liberal Party haven't even been prepared to nominate a candidate for Corio. I mean, it says everything about their intent in relation to Geelong. And the truth is that, you know, not just the electorate of Corangamite, but throughout Geelong, there have been there are real challenges. And certainly when we were in government, we made sure that there was significant funding in the northern part of Geelong. This government can barely find Geelong on the map.
But the Northern Arc, for example, is that a project that you are in support of?
Well, Northern Arc is certainly a project I'm advocating for, and it is a really good project. It's a precinct which absolutely needs to be brought up to date. I think, you know, for a lot of people who have grown up in the north, the Norlane Pool has been a centre of activity. It's where I learnt to swim. And, you know, you look at it now and it's a shadow of its former self. And what Northern Arc is about is trying to revitalise all of that precinct and give the kind of appropriate recreational area, but not just recreational area, a community centre on that precinct which the north deserves. So as I say, it is certainly a project I'm advocating for, but I come back to this is a government which has struggled to find Geelong on the map for the last 6 years. They can't even name a candidate for the electorate of Corio, and here we are on the 2nd of April. There's every likelihood an election's going to be called within the next week. And they haven't even fronted with somebody. I mean, that, since I've been around, that has never happened before. And it says everything about the complete contempt with which they treat Geelong. And the sort of announcements that we've been seeing, you know, rolling off the back of the truck in the last few months in relation to Corangamite, right at the 11th hour because of their anxiety in respect of that electorate, I think people can see it for what it is.
Does the government have plans to fund, the opposition, if they were to form government, do they have plans to fund the Northern Arc, or is that still under negotiation? Because the council was very disappointed that they apparently applied for funding through the Better Regions Fund and missed out, and you may blame the incumbents for that, but would Labor change that?
Well, the incumbents are those who are managing the Better Regions Fund, so it's appropriate that that's where the criticism lies. I'm certainly advocating for that, and I've been talking a lot with the council, and we'll see where we get to with that, and in relation to a number of the measures that we're talking about across the whole of Geelong. But what I would point to is our records here, our respective records. When we were in government, there was significant funding across the northern part of Geelong, the northern community hub of Diversitat, the Trade Training Centre at Northern Bay College. You know, there were a range of projects that we funded across the northern part of Geelong and Geelong more generally, not just in the seat of Crangamite, although in the seat of Crangamite as well. We didn't focus on just one area. That's what we did when we were in government. What this lot have been doing over the last 6 years is trying to get out the magnifying glass, see where they can actually locate Geelong on the map, and when they have, and they've done it basically by virtue of the margin of Corangamite, have realised they need to throw some things off the back of a truck in the last couple of days before an election, and that's what we're seeing.
What do you think of the city deal? Do you think that it included too many projects in Corangamite and excluded Geelong and some of the projects in this end of the woods from that?
Well, I think those who, the civic leadership of Geelong have made their views very plain in respect of the city deal. And in relation to what the federal government was contributing, there was literally no focus on the north at all. And indeed, a whole lot of the funding that was being put forward by the federal government in respect of this ended up not being in Geelong at all. I would say that I think the state government have been very focused on Geelong and the northern part of Geelong. And again, you only need to look at what the state government's doing in terms of the northern campus of Bowen Health, which is right next to where the Northern Arc would be built, to understand that the Daniel Andrews Labor government is actually focused on the whole of Geelong. But the federal Liberals have got no interest in anything north of the river at all. That's the bottom line. And I think that's reflected in the way in which they engaged in the city deal process.
In terms of fast rail, what are your thoughts on that? Because I noticed the government made this commitment, but then I think Labor under Bill Shorten has also matched it. How is it actually going to be implemented and what's it going to look like?
Well, what we've said is that those components that were announced in the last few days by the government we would match and what we expect to see in the budget tonight. And that's an important thing to say, because that goes to the question of the duplication of the rail line between South Geelong and Warm Ponds, which is going to be a really important piece of infrastructure for those in southern Geelong, as well as some of the other components of that rail announcement. In terms of improving the rail service between Geelong and Melbourne, there was a significant breakthrough, I think, at the last state election, that both parties were committing to fast rail in the second half of the 2020s. Now, there was a very clear mandate that was achieved by state Labor in respect of their proposition. Both parties sought to put forward a proposition about how fast rail should be done. People in Geelong voted with their feet in respect of the Andrews Labor government and their delivery of infrastructure around the state about the proposition that they are putting forward. Now, that essentially will see a spur be built from Sunshine through to Geelong, which would deliver a 40-minute train trip and at a rate which is affordable. And, I don't think there's been a better deliverer of infrastructure at a state level than the existing state government. From a federal perspective, that's what we'd back. And what we've seen announced a few weeks ago by the federal government was essentially a reheated version of what Matthew Guy was putting forward at the last state election, and which was ultimately rejected. So the answer to your question from a federal perspective, Mitchell, is we'd work with the state government in delivering fast rail. I think people have a sense of faith that this is a state government that can deliver infrastructure, and so we'd be wanting to partner with them. And that would see the completion of this, as I understand it, in the 2020s, and that is a realistic way forward. Now, the what we've seen in terms of the duplication of the rail lines between South Geelong and Warm Pond forms part of that as well. So, I mean, that's a sort of necessary precondition whichever way you go. But I think what people can sort of take from all of that is we are going to see much faster rail in between Geelong and Melbourne over the course of the next decade or so. It's a question of who has the capability of delivering it. And right now, this broken federal government has got no capability to deliver anything.
Do we have a sense yet as to what the stops might be on that fast rail service? Because on one hand, it needs to be almost non-stop, maybe from Geelong, Sunshine, Southern Cross, in order to take advantage of it being fast rail. But then on the other hand, people like the Public Transport Users Association are saying, well, it has to stop because that's kind of the point of public transport, to let people on.
Yeah, and look, there's always a debate around that, and I don't know the specific answers to it, but the happy balance has to be found there. But the sort of numbers that were being quoted at the last state election in relation to the proposal being put forward by State Labor was a 40-minute train trip between Geelong and Melbourne, and I think that's got to be essentially the basis of how you move forward in terms of what decisions you make in relation to where the train stops or not. But, I mean, the point you make is completely valid, that you get that decision wrong and it can have a big impact on actually the duration of the trip, and it doesn't matter how fast the trains go, if they're constantly stopping, then it won't be a faster trip. So that's the sort of detail that needs to be got right. But I think what people are expecting here is a significantly shorter trip.
Just last of all, on energy prices and the government's climate change approach, first of all, there was the school strike for climate that was, I think, outside your office, and I saw that you in fact addressed that rally.
I did.
From what I could understand, the students were advocating for 100% renewable energy by 2030. That differs from Labor's policy, is that right?
Well, I think firstly, students were standing up and seeking action from their government in relation to an issue which is going to impact them as they are teenagers right now, far more than they're going to impact me, a person who's on the wrong side of 50. And I find it hard, to be critical of a group of people who are really seeking, immediate action in respect of an issue which is going to so profoundly affect them. So I think that the first point they were making was, they need to see something being done. What we're proposing is 50% renewables by 2030, as you said. That actually would be a credible way forward for Australia in terms of transitioning to a lower carbon economy, which is ultimately what we need to do. And we need to do that for a couple of reasons. One is we do need to be playing our part in saving the planet, in tackling the question of climate change. But perhaps as significantly is in a world which is going to penalise carbon-based production in the future, we actually need, from our own self-interested point of view, to be transitioning our economy to a low-carbon one, so that we're not penalised in that way and so that it's as an efficient and as modern economy as possible. So if you saw this through no other lens than Australia's own economic self-interest, this is still something that we should be doing. But what we've got at the moment, and sorry, I should also say in that what that therefore is crying out for is a political consensus about how to move forward on this. Now, we want to see that, and we actually want to see that with the Liberals, but right now we're not getting that because the Liberals can't find a consensus within their own party room. I mean, they are at war with themselves on this. They have had multiple proposals before they even started talking to us, because they actually just can't get an agreement within their own party room about which way to go forward. This is an absolutely fundamental challenge of government today, and this is a party which has patently failed that challenge because they literally cannot make a decision about it within their own show, and I think it's the frustration that we all feel in respect of that was being vented by students during their strike.
I believe it's also Greens' policy to go 100% renewable by 2030. Are you just saying that that's too uneconomic?
Well, you've got to do this in a realistic way, and we think a sensible and realistic way forward is a 50% renewable target by 2030. We're looking at a 45% emissions reduction target by 2030 as well, based on 2005 levels. They are sensible targets with policies that back them up, which will see a transitioning of our economy whilst at the same time enabling our economy to continue to grow, which is the trick here, to try and transition in that way, and that can absolutely be done, and that is a practical way forward. But right now we're literally the only party that's offering any practical way forward, because you've got some kind of propositions on the fringe, but the other party of government is completely internally paralysed on this issue, so that actually can't even make a decision.
The government's put up a cash payment to try and ease the suffering when it comes to energy prices, and it's targeted to certain people in the community. How would Labor go about trying to ease the pain of energy prices that people are experiencing?
Well, we actually need to have an energy policy. So you can, again, these kind of one-off payments, which amount to $3 or $4 a week once, like that's what we're talking about, one payment, a few weeks out from an election, I reckon everyone can understand what that's actually about. But it doesn't solve the structural problem in relation to energy prices at all. What solves that is having consistent energy policy, so that there is certainty for those seeking to invest in the energy market, which is what is needed if we're going to have affordable energy in this country. And you know, there's been no certainty under this government, because basically they are struggling to actually make a decision.
All right, I think you've got to go, Richard. Thanks for being on the program. All the best with Budget Day and the Budget Reply. We look forward to it.
Thanks, Mitchell.
See you. Thank you. Richard Miles there, the federal member for Corio.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.